Hey everybody, welcome back to Check the Gate, an AFI deep dive back from our year-long hiatus. Woo! How y'all doing?
Yeah. Good, how are you?
I'm good. I'm Bert, and as always, I'm joined here with Brandon.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
Like we did a year ago, we all chose our these movies that we wanted to do now that the list is proper done. We put those 100 movies to bed. We all went in for a pool, and Brandon, this was a you pick. Our film is Back to the Future. Since you chose this movie, why don't you talk about why this is one of the movies that you felt like we needed to do?
Well, all right. So being a big fan of 80s movies, grown up in that era, just after that era, I guess, but old enough to understand 80s movies, this was one of my favorite movies, and still is one of my favorite movies of all time. This movie, you know, has a little bit of everything. It's got comedy, it's got action, a little bit of drama, twists. It's a great storyline, great plot. Yeah, I mean, what can be better than time travel, guys? Like, I'm a big fan. Like, I love time travel. And
are you
these
big
guys,
on all three of them?
Just the first two.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes
those
sense.
Those are my favorite. But yeah, it's just a great movie about a great character, great couple characters, Doc Brown and Marty McFly, that are just, you know,
that iconic image of the two.
Yeah. They're just a classic duo. You know, it's just like a buddy adventure movie.
Yeah, between a 17-year-old and a 30 to 70-year-old.
Yeah, We don't really know, because I don't believe in the first movie, the Back to the Future, that was the first time Doc Brown ever time traveled.
You don't think so?
No, you think the first time time traveling was when he sent that dog in there?
Yeah, 30 years. He had to spend all that money. He had to go. Steal a bunch of plutonium. He didn't have the plutonium until, you know, what, 2 weeks before is what the TV said at the beginning?
Yeah, that is true.
Other than that, it's a bolt of lightning. A bolt of lightning!
Plasma.
You know.
But, I mean, this movie was just awesome. And then, you know, obviously the two other movies that came out afterwards, you know, had great success. Yeah, that's why I chose it. It's just a solid movie.
Yeah. And obviously we did Forrest Gump, which is the two Zemeckis movies we're going to do, I think I prefer over Forrest Gump, so it's kind of strange that...
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one that won all the Oscars and awards and all that stuff, so it's probably why it's more of a Oscar darling than it is just a fun, great popcorn flick.
Yeah. A great summer movie, you know. I thought the storyline was just fantastic, well written. You know, they take a complex theory in time travel, right? And the butterfly effect, and they just kept it simple. It was just as not over anybody's head. Like, you use a car to time travel, you know, and you go back in time. Your choices might influence things that happen in the future.
Yeah. And I mean, they're very good about, you know, obviously we'll get into it, but the first 20 minutes, it's all setting you up for the other hour and a half. It kind of reminds me of, you know, a million years ago when we started this podcast and we did Jaws, where we find out there's a shark attack, telling us why it's important that this is a bad thing that's happening to this town. He just walks through the town and it shows us that it's 4th of July weekend. It's very important. You know, all the tourist stuff's coming in. So that first 20 minutes, we're setting up. He loves rock and roll. He can skateboard. his parents met his mom pretty much just, you know, word vomits all exposition just about setting up how they met and why that's such a big deal that it didn't work that way. You know, like all that kind of stuff. Just taking us through the really dirty porn theater town of Hill Valley, setting up those landmarks. Obviously, you know, him even just getting the flyer, that's going to set up why they know the exact time and date that this lightning storm's going to happen kind of thing. So it's all that first 20 minutes, it's kind of like information overload, but it sets you up for such a breezy hour and a half, you know?
Yeah, and it's so, and that stuff is so relatable too. Like, it's a teenager coming of age movie too, where you think your parents are so weird, they must be from Mars or whatever, you know. And he's like, I don't know how I'm born from these people.
Doesn't help when your dad's a goober.
And dude, Crispin Glover, man, bravo, bravo, right? Like that is such a good character. Yeah. Like, to play someone so like meek and just like timid, it's great.
Like, he's played other like doofusy characters, but maybe that's the only
that's
one that I remember him as. Is like, yeah, that's
he
his,
was
that's
the hair sniffing villain in the Charlie's Angels movie, that first one.
I don't know. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
okay. He has like the same exact haircut.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's like greased over.
His movie with the rats, it was like Willard or something like that. As a weird ass movie.
Oh.
That actually like rang a bell.
I mean, he definitely has a lane.
I'll have to look into that.
And he, you know,
I have seen that movie. Yep, I just looked it up. Yeah,
the movie poster, knew it.
You know, even more than just Doc Brown and Marty, but you also get like that great Biff Tannen villain where. Apparently he's just a canon event in all of the McFly timeline, whether it's past, present, or future. There's always just a tan in there that's trying to fuck your shit up, and he's gonna get doused in manure one way or the other.
Great scene.
Just, you know,
love that.
We need to bring Butthead back, I think.
There's so many good lines in the movie too. Gave us so many good
make
quotes.
Make like a tree and get out of here.
I love it.
Yeah,
I finally invented something that works. So no. Good.
Well, anyway, like I said, we're doing Back to the Future, which is a 1985 film. It's about Marty McFly, a 17-year-old high school student who is accidentally sent 30 years in the past in a time-traveling DeLorean invented by his close friend, the maverick scientist Doc Brown. The top three films in 1985 are number 3, Rocky IV, 2, Rambo First Blood, so we got a double dip of Stallone, and number 1 is obviously Back to the Future. A ticket cost in 1985, $3.55, which is equivalent to $10.34 our money. The budget started at $15 million, but ballooned to $19 million for reasons we'll obviously get into, which is equivalent to $55.3 million our money. And the total box office was $384.5 million, which is equivalent to $1.1 billion with the pinky. The film was nominated for 4 Academy Awards and it won 1. It lost original song for The Power of Love by Huey Lewis, Best Sound and Original Screenplay. However, it won for sound effects and visual effects and sound editing. There you go. Beautiful. When we open on this movie, you know, it's kind of like what I said before. We get that, you know, great tracking shot where we're kind of setting up what's going on. We're showing, we're not telling. You know, obviously we get the images of the clocks. You know, time is a very big deal in this movie, but you know, then we get all these Rube Goldberg machines that you can see that have been, you know, left unattended. We got dog food piling up, getting all gross. We got toast that's burning because it's been left in a toaster for 2 weeks,
a couple days.
Yeah. The TV is saying that there's been plutonium that's been stolen by Libyan nationalists. They don't know where it is. And then we get the Michael J. Fox feet walking in, the skateboard rolls in, and it nudges up against that plutonium box. So, okay, yeah. He's got it here, and he pulls out the world's smallest guitar, possibly a ukulele, plugs it into the world's largest amp. And, by the way, that guitar's got to be tiny because Michael J. Fox is like 5'5".
And yeah, he's a small guy too.
Wails on it, gets blasted back. Phone rings. He gets a call from Doc, who lets him know, Marty, oh, you're at my house. I need you to meet me at the Twin Pines Mall at 1:15 a.m. Also, be sure not to plug in that amp because I don't think it's been properly tested. Oh, good to know.
Oops.
We get that great iconic shot of him skateboarding by grabbing onto the. He's the coolest kid in school.
So cool. So
just
cool.
Driving around Burbank, hanging onto the back of cars. What the power of love.
I wanted that Toyota pickup so bad.
Really?
That black one.
The Jurassic Park spotlights up on top of it.
Yeah, the roll bars.
I always wanted that Mountain Dew hat that the driver's wearing. Like the old 80s trucker hats that were just everybody's hats. You know, like I said, we're kind of introducing us to the... We're setting up landmarks... School covered in graffiti. All the streets are like porn shops, porn theaters, or they're just run down, dilapidated drugstores, bail bonds. We got a diner. You know, like we got vote for Goldie Wilson for mayor. His middle name is Progress. Don't forget that. The running rundown clock tower, which is in the back lot of Universal Studios. I've actually been there. It's pretty cool, that entire area.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Universal Studios, either of you?
Yes.
No?
Yes. Yes, twice.
No.
I actually have an interesting story I will get to when it's relevant about this movie and that back lot. But we're setting up that Marty loves to play guitar. He's in the Battle of the Bands. Fun fact, I've only ever done bar trivia twice, and both times... The tie-breaking question was, what is Marty's band in Back to the Future?
I would lose.
Pinheads. Remember that. You'll never forget it now. We're setting up that it's a big weekend. He's going to go out to the lake with his girlfriend. It's alluding that they're going to have sex for the first time. That's why it's a really big, important time. I thought it was weird that after school, her dad picks her up at the town square instead of at school.
At school, yeah.
They're just like... You know, that's when they set up the whole save the clock tower. The mayor's trying to put in a new clock. Sounds like a great idea. It's the only thing that they're trying to refurbish in this entire area, and they don't want him to do it. We find out that 30 years ago on this exact day, lightning struck that clock tower and made it stop forever. Hands him a flyer. Marty races back home, finds out his car has been totaled. Well, his dad's car has been totaled because...
Dad's.
His dad, George's lifelong bully, Biff Tannen, Butthead, has totaled his car because he didn't know the car had a blind spot. He's straight up just big manning him the whole time. Telling him he's got to write up his own report so he can type it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he's pretty much just watching his dad be a giant pushover. And it's kind of painful to watch, to be honest. Obviously, I know that's...
Yeah, it definitely aggravates you.
Yeah, especially...
Well, and you just get the disappointment from Marty, just like, man, I'm supposed to look up to this guy, but he's just...
Yeah, I mean, especially after he leaves, pushed. You know, and then his dad's like, I know, yeah. I know. I'm a sad sack, wet blanket.
I love how he talks.
I am your density. And there are stories about visitors... You know, his mom, you know, sets up, we find it, you know, we see the show don't tell. His mom is clearly an alcoholic, sitting down with a glass of vodka at the table. Your Uncle Joey didn't make parole again.
Like in her bathrobe. Yeah.
Your Uncle Joey didn't make parole again, which is another great little thing that happens a little later. you know, and then she's, you know, pretty much is like, you know, if your grandfather hadn't run over, you know, your dad, we never would have gone to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. We never would have kissed for the first time. We never would have fallen in love. And then she was like, I knew that moment. You know, it starts off very sweet. And then she, like, slows down,
trails off into depression.
We just cut to George just laughing at Jackie Gleason.
He's a real winner, guys.
This big bowl of peanut brittle for dinner. Oh, by the way, I guess there was a deleted scene that showed, it was like a little girl and a father showed up at the house, and he was like, "Hey, my daughter is trying to raise money by selling peanut brittle. Will you buy 20 boxes?" kind of thing. And he says, "Sure."
And that's where he gets
and
it
then
all, yep.
The dad turns to his daughter and says, "See, we don't need to go house to house. We'll just come here because George McFly is a pushover and he'll just buy all of it." So that was like, that's why, one, the camera like leers on that peanut brittle, but that scene was cut out. So it's, he's just filling up an entire bowl for dinner of just peanut brittle. And like that, and again, you get the shot of Marty looking at him, looking down at the peanut brittle, just like, come on, man.
What the hell?
Yeah. What has my life come to?
Dude, all the little nuggets in this movie are so good, you know. And the fact that they like,
and there's so many too.
Yeah, and the fact that they follow up on them too. It's not just like this throwaway.
That's what
thing.
I'm saying. Like everything that's set up is, you know, has to do with something. So you're getting a lot in that first 20 minutes, but it's all for a reason. It's all thoroughly thought out. And I mean, they nailed it. I mean, do you have any time travel bugaboos about this movie? Like, you know, there's usually, with any time travel movie, somebody's got something to complain about, but
like the theory of it.
No, yeah, like does it exist?
I mean, I ain't a smart man.
You know, there's always like some sort of loophole or questions that weren't answered. If he did this, would it actually set up this kind of thing? You know,
rudimentary, like science wise. I mean, they're on to something with the flux capacitor, but. I mean, it's clearly just for fun.
Yeah.
And the best part about like the time travel part, or I guess with any movie with time travel, they the lore behind it and the speculation behind things. That's what makes it fun too.
Yeah, and the thought of just being able to go to your past and, you know, change one thing or see how your parents were in high school,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and changing that one thing might have like this ultimate effect on how your life becomes. Or just kind of repeats itself, like in his case, just things repeat themselves, but there's just a little bit of a difference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when she's telling the story about if your grandpa wouldn't have hit your dad with the car, and then like literally later in the movie, like the same thing happens, and you're like, whoa.
It's the Florence Nightingale effect.
Holy smoke.
Yeah.
Michael J. Fox meets Doc Brown at the Twin Pines Mall. Remember that? Pulls up, we get that iconic shot of the van opening up, the steam coming out, and like a DeLorean of all cars comes piling out. I guess by this time the DeLorean had already shit the bed. Cheaper to use, and I guess but then after this movie it made everything, it kind of juiced it up just for a little bit,
made it super super cool for like 2 years, and then it died off
again. Car, so.
Yeah,
I think they only made like 9,000, I was reading.
Wow.
No. But you know, if you,
I knew it was very little.
If
but,
you wanted to, if you want to make a time machine, you want something that you can travel in style, you know. But I read that they did the DeLorean because the doors that had the butterfly doors, and for 1955 that would seem very futuristic, and that's the whole, you know, he's from space kind of like, it's a spaceship, not a car. But
dude, DeLorean's still doing stuff.
Are they?
I just looked at their website. They have a pretty futuristic-looking car. It's called the Alpha 5. Ooh. So when you get a second, take a gander at it.
I know that after this movie came out, they made like mods that you could modify your DeLorean to look like the time machine.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, feed into it, you know?
Yeah. You know, and there's always like every October 26th, there's a story about a guy getting pulled over, speeding in a DeLorean, going 88 miles an hour. especially back in 20
on Back to the Future
Day, 2015, yeah. October 26th. It was just they did like a parade of DeLoreans. Probably used half the DeLoreans that still worked for the parade. Christopher Lloyd is absolutely, his look alone is super iconic. You know, the white plutonium jacket, the
sideshow, the white sideshow hair, sideshow bob hair.
It's like the Einstein white poof. but like yeah. with the Costanza horseshoe ball up on top. he lets us know that he's finally done it. This is the big one, Marty. Finally did it. And if my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles an hour, you're going to see some serious shit. Which, by the way, isn't on one of the famous quotes list. There were no famous quotes, not even 1.21 gigawatts, nothing.
Or Great Scott.
No Great Scott. No Butthead.
Dang.
Of all the things that are on there that we were like, what the hell? Like, that, yeah. Wow.
Not,
we could replace a lot of them with the, with this one, you know?
Chuck, it's me, Marvin. Marvin Barry. That's not on there. That new sound you're looking
where we're
for.
Going, we don't need roads.
Not on there. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Man.
More shit.
He loads up Einstein, backs him up, fires him off 88 miles an hour. You get that iconic shot of him trying to move out of the way, and he kind of like has him come back. He hits 88, blasts off. You get the fire tracks at the, right at their feet. Turns around. He thinks that he just disintegrated Einstein. I had seen that in when they did test showings for this movie, they didn't tell anybody what it was about, and they didn't know it was a comedy. So they thought that they were like, is this just a movie where they just blew a dog out? So like these, yep. Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, the guy who wrote the film, said that you could feel the air get sucked out of the theater because people were like legitimately worried about this dog.
Worried about the dog. Like, yeah, we just sent him back in time, guys.
Forward in time. Not where the hell is he, when the hell
yeah,
is
forward,
he.
Forward, yeah. There you go, another good one.
Lets him know he's in the future, 1 minute. To him, it seems simultaneous, and then right at that minute, they jump out of the way and the car comes back. Sure enough, he's 1 minute in the future. He gave him those synchronized clocks, and it's a minute off.
Time dilation.
Takes him inside. Let me show you how it works. Shows him the flux capacitor, that classic Y. I always said that my first vehicle,
so
I was
cool.
going to put one of those in there, just like have in the back. I never did.
Bummer.
He lets us know that he invented time travel 30 years ago when he was trying to fix a clock in his bathroom, slipped on wet porcelain, slammed his head against the counter, and when he came to, that's when he discovered...
Got the idea.
And, you know, I asked you when you were here in town, Michael, but did you invent time travel when you did the same thing a couple months ago?
No. Just bled everywhere. My dog looked at me like, what's your deal?
You idiot.
Get up or what?
Yeah, you... No. Final answer, no, I did not.
you know, Doc Brown lets us know that, you know, he finally did something that worked. You know, he kind of waxed poetic a little bit. You know, it's like time is a big deal. You know, 30 years ago, I remember when, oh, this was orange groves as far as the eye could see. You know, it's all farmland. There was this guy named Peabody who had this weird idea about breeding pine trees.
Pine trees, huh?
Looks and snaps back into the... Anyway, okay. All right, well, I'll look you up in the future. I'm going to go, you know, discover time. All of a sudden... Libyan nationalists. I don't know how they found me, but they found me.
they're tracking the plutonium.
He said that he was going to make him a bomb, and said he gave him a bomb casing full of old pinball parts. they find him.
Classic Doc Brown.
Roll up, blow his ass away. Shoot him, kill him. He's dead. Marty flips out. Gets in the car, tries to escape himself. Also, it's like he wasn't even paying attention because he said he was going to go 88 miles an hour and he goes, let's see if you guys can do 90. Obviously, hits the ideal 88 miles an hour. Doc already said it for the past, so instantaneously blasts into the past. He goes from a parking lot to a field and crashes into a barn. That family wakes up, you know, you get the classic, like, oh, what's going on? They go in there and there's that space vehicle. He gets out and he's in a hazmat suit. So he looks like an alien.
Aliens.
The kid's got the comic book, you know, The Man from Pluto, which was originally the title of this movie.
Which was, yeah.
A little nod, because I guess they said they were getting a lot of complaints about the title being confusing. Because how do you go back to the future? The future, you go forward to the future. That was like a big bugaboo for every for everybody. But Steven Spielberg loved the title, so.
Yeah, I think that's the allure of the name, right?
Like, and they say the titular line in the title in the movie too. So.
Yeah.
And it makes sense once he says it. Just read that part in the script, guys. We're gonna send you back to the future. Marty's freaked out. He thinks he's having like some sort of like fever dream. The car's out of gas, both literally and, you know, no plutonium, but also because it doesn't run on gas. He stashes the car, and he makes his way into Hill Valley, and it's pristine. You know, you get like the classic Mr. Sandman song playing over everything, just showing you how bright everything is, and then you got the current mayor from 1955. You know, progress is his middle name. You know, some things never change, and he makes his way into that diner. What was that back? He's got the vest on. Everyone calls it a life preserver.
The life jacket.
What are you out at sea? What? No. Can I get a Pepsi free? If you can get a soda pop, you're gonna pay for it. How about a tab? Buddy, you can't start a tab if you ain't getting nothing. Then he give me something with no sugar. So he gives him a water.
Water.
Goes to the public phone, because that's back when they had yellow pages. I guess they probably still did in 88 also. 85, but... finds Doc Brown's address, because that's a crazy thing that about phone books. It's not just to have your phone number in there, but your address is in there. I don't know why we never thought that wasn't a bad idea.
Right.
I mean, it's the same as... I mean, everything's online now, too, but yeah, no, I mean...
Sure, but, like, all I have to do is...
But now you're supposed to, like, protect your...
Yeah, it's a whole thing now.
Your information.
You're just advertising where you live.
We made the yellow pages.
Just pick up a 1990s phone book and you'll find me.
I remember thinking that was really cool as a kid, because we had a phone book. You know, I mean, like, everybody's household had one. Go in there and you flip to the
C's. Yeah, then you look up your own phone number, yeah.
There we are.
Yeah, you used to, like, try to find your friends, yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to guess what their parents' names are. We just know their last names.
Good luck if their
last
name's like...
It's gotta be that one.
Yeah, good luck if their last name's like Patterson or something.
He runs into his dad. Uncanny. He's still a goof. Some things never change. And that's when we meet young Biff. With his insane clown posse that follows him around. One of them is Billy Zane. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah. I noticed it again, like watching it. I'm like... There he is. He's in everything.
Today. You know, we get almost the exact same dialogue. Hey, did you finish my homework? Well, you know, Beth, you gotta give me all the time. He's like, you gotta give me time to rewrite it in my handwriting, because if I don't write it in my handwriting, I'm gonna get kicked out of school. And you wouldn't want that now, would you? Would you? All that kind of stuff. You know, we get that really funny look where Marty's trying to talk to George, and he's clearly just like freaked out by this guy who like is taking this interest in him. He sneaks away and he follows him to a tree where he's having a little peep show, because he's seen a lady get undressed. He's a peeping Tom. He's a perv.
He's a perv.
George falls out of the tree. There's a car coming. Marty pushes him out of the way. Car hits him. His head slams on the concrete. And what gets me is when the guy gets out of the car, you know, Marty's grandpa, he goes, another one. So this isn't...
another one, yeah.
This isn't the first time kids are falling out of... It's either not the first time people are falling out of this tree watching his daughter undress, or it's not the first time he's run over children on that street. either or, this is a common occurrence. He wakes up to the sound of his mother's voice. Oh, he's like, oh my god, I had a terrible dream. And now you're safe in my room in 1955. He wakes up. It's his mother, much younger, played by Leah Thompson. Great. Snubbed at the Oscars that year.
Who's just ready to jump his bones while he's, like, waking up.
Yeah, she's insatiable.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like at the beginning where, you know, because Marty's girlfriend is calling the house, and she goes... girls calling after boys, calling it, you know, following boys home, or, you know, sitting in a parked car with boys. I never did anything like that. And then we find out it's quite the opposite.
quite the opposite. Yeah,
it turns out all our parents were also like that growing up. All the stuff that they tell us not to do, they did it first.
Like a phony.
She's calling him Calvin. He doesn't understand why. It's like, because it's written on your underwear, silly.
Oh, yeah.
We get...
Telling you, the nuggets. Nuggets.
You know, we go downstairs to meet the family. We just installed our brand new spanking black and white TV. Now we can watch Jackie Gleason while we eat. One of my favorite just small moments that doesn't mean anything. It's just like, you know, he kind of leans and he's got his Uncle Joey as a baby in the crib. And he goes, oh, he cries every time we take him out. So we just leave him in there. Get used to those bars, kid.
Yeah.
You know, he spoils Jackie Gleason for him. Because what's a rerun? You know, we get... That's the kind of stuff that people do way too much now. Any sort of time travel thing, it's... Yeah. I'm going to say something from my time, and then you say, what is that?
Predict what the future.
Mean? You know, like, this movie, you know, is obviously probably one of the first ones to do it, but it's just like, now it's just an overused trope. I'm going to say things, you're going to say what, and it's like, oh, you'll hear about it later. You know, that kind of thing.
You don't know about
who
that.
Who the hell is John F. Kennedy? Lorraine, his mom, wants him to, like, stay the night in her room, all that kind of stuff. He's got to get the fuck out of there. He's got to go meet Doc. He goes to Doc's home. We get that. We find out he's got the bandage on his head because he had just hit his head. Tells him he's from the future. Who's the president? Ronald Reagan. The actor?
The actor.
Yeah.
Who's the vice president? Jerry Lewis? He tells him what we already know. The reason why you have that owie on your head is because you slipped off your toilet, smacked your head. And that's when he invented time travel, Doc. And he, you know, shows him the picture of the flux capacitor. He takes him to the DeLorean, shows him he did it. Eureka, great Scott. I finally did something worthwhile. You know, he has that mind-reading device on his head that doesn't work. Do you know what this means?
It's just a crackpot, man.
Yeah.
You know, and also at the beginning of the movie when, you know, the TV's telling us about the plutonium, we have the newspaper clippings saying that, you know, his house burned down and then he sold off 135 prime acres. So you're wondering if he burned it down for the insurance money. You know, and then, because, you know, he says that later he sold his entire family fortune to invent this time travel machine. So he's getting close to being a for real crackpot. Because now he hit his head. Now he literally had a vision from God about time travel.
Descending into madness.
Yeah. We get it back to the car. He shows him the videotape, which he had a pretty easy hookup to hook up his 1985
video
camera to his black and white 1955 TV. I love his. He's watching. He's like, "Oh my God, I'm so old. Oh, I still have great hair though." The exact same terrible hair.
Same exact.
You know, he mentions that he needs plutonium for the 1.21 gigawatts worth of power. You need, he freaks out. And he goes, no, it's cool. We just need plutonium. You know, he makes the comment. He's like, in 1985, plutonium might be easy to buy, but it's a little hard to find nowadays. He's like, the only thing that would give that kind of electricity is a bolt of lightning. A bolt of lightning! And you can't even predict when that's going to happen. Au contraire, mon frère.
But can we?
Luckily, I was given that flyer that says exactly when it's going to happen. Oh, I can stand the week in 1955. Hey, he lets him know, hey, just, we're hanging out for a week. Stay away from your family. Butterfly effect. Anything you do.
Stay away from your mom.
Yeah. Bite off your mom.
Anything you do is going to possibly, yeah, the implicate, not the implications, but the
ramifications.
The ramifications. I'm not willing to accept the responsibility of what's going to happen if you do anything that's going... And then that's when we find out that he actually did meet his mom and his parents. He pulls a photo of his family out.
They're disappearing.
They're starting to disappear. That's when we find out he does the math in his head. Oh, yeah. I was the one who got hit by the car. You know, we go to the school and we see his dad is just a straight-up dweeb. Doc Brown's like, oh, maybe you were adopted. He's got the kick me sign on him, and the principal gets mad at him because he's getting picked
up. Yeah.
He's such a slacker.
He's just a dweeb.
Doc's like, we need to find some sort of rhythmic ceremony ritual, or whatever. You know, like, he says something silly just to say dance. Here's the Enchantment of the Sea dance. It's coming up. That's what we need to do. Here we go. Plans in motion. We got to set these two lovebirds up. But how are we going to do that? Because every time I talk to Lorraine, she swoons. He's such a dreamboat. Everything he does to try to prop George up just makes him look that much more the stud muffin. It doesn't help that every time he sends George in there to do his hit on her, Biff shows up, ruins everything. Marty steps in to fight Biff. That just makes Marty look even more the tough guy. We get that iconic skateboard car chase where he invents skateboarding. Also, you know, he takes the box scooter from those kids.
Scooter.
Yeah. Get that great chase while they're in that nice souped up car that ends with them crashing into a manure. Oh, I hate manure. I think that's from the third one. But back at Doc's home, Marty finds out that Doc has been watching all the tape that shows him get shot to death. Well, he didn't get that far, but he sees that something bad happens. He wants to tell him, but you can't tell me. You're going to undo the fabric of space and time if you do that. But then suddenly there's a knock at the door because Lorraine has followed him home. We get that great shot of like Doc standing behind her with the face. He's like, this is bad.
Are you telling me my mom's got the hots for me?
There's that word again, heavy. Is there something wrong with the gravitational pull in the future? That's heavy duty, Doc.
That's heavy, Doc.
She wants him to take her to the dance, and then she's like, wouldn't you rather go with George? He's hot. And she's like, I mean, he's okay, but he's a fucking dork. Marty's like, goes to George, you gotta take her to the dance, here's what's gonna happen. And then he's like, no, I'm not doing it. So he sneaks in and pretends to be an alien. Puts Van Darth Halen Vader on in his headphones and blasts that terrible rock and roll music from 1955. Says he's gonna melt his brain if he doesn't take Lorraine to the dance. So now he has to take Lorraine to the dance. They come up with a plan. I'm gonna sit in the car with her. I'm gonna get a little physical with her. You come in, save the day. I have to swear? God damn it, George, you gotta swear. Hey, you, get your damn hands off of her. And then you're gonna punch me in the face. Everything will be fine. She'll fall in love with you. You'll kiss. And that'll, you know, you'll live happily ever after. Sounds easy enough. What could go wrong?
Biff.
It's the night of the dance, and it's also the same night as the giant storm. Doc Brown's hooking up his weather experiment. That he has to have papers for. Hooking up, essentially, lightning's going to strike the tower. It's going to follow this wire down. Forgive my crude model. He said I didn't have time to paint it. He did it in like a couple hours. Like a perfect to scale model. Yeah.
Replica.
Forgive my crude drawing. Like my.
Damn, that's pretty good.
Which is another running thing. He says that multiple times over the series, too. He hits it exactly 88 miles an hour. It's going to hit the cord that's attached to the car. It's going to take him back to the future. Perfect. Say the line. Take a drink. Sounds good. We pull up in the car. Marty and Lorraine are in the car. She's sneaking alcohol. I snuck it from my mom's liquor cabinet. He can already see the writing. Oh, you shouldn't be drinking. That can lead to, you know. She takes a puff of a cigarette. Oh, now you smoked. She starts getting super handsy with him, lays a big old kiss on him, but she doesn't like it, which is good, thank God. I had read that a lot of people reading the script, they didn't like it because they thought it was too funny, and nobody wanted to pick it up, so somebody told Zemeckis and Gale, take it to Disney, and they took it to Disney, and Disney was like, are you fucking insane? This is incest. So it was
gross.
Intense enough for other studios, but it was too extreme for Disney.
For so Disney,
then,
yeah.
Universal picked it up because Spielberg got the bump with them. She tells him, you know, I don't know what it is, but kissing you, it's like kissing my brother. No good. The door opened.
A little bit different, opens, but...
He's like, oh, thank God, George. He gets pulled out, but it's Biff. The goon squad grab him, throw him in the back of a trunk that turns out to be the band playing at the dance, their trunk. He gets locked in there with the keys. And Biff decides he's going to force himself on Lorraine, which is crazy that at the end of the movie he is like George's lackey. So it's like weird that you're constantly keeping this man around your family after he like literally
right. And that scene is that scene's very aggressive too.
Well,
for like the tone
when,
of the movie,
you know,
like,
George comes down, oh shit, I'm late, I'm supposed to go down there, opens the door, hey you, get your damn hand, and then he turns around and like she is like the fear in her eyes, it's like terrifying. It's just like Jesus, this,
yeah,
you know, like you were just saying, the tone shifts dramatically.
Yeah, big time. I remember it, yeah, just, you know, watching it for the podcast, and I was just like, had that same feeling again, just like, ooh, uncomfortable, like your skin kind of crawls a little bit, and you're like, I thought this was a funny movie.
He pretty
just
much
got
tells
real.
Him, Biff tells him, just walk away, which is insane, because I'm assuming they're just going to go to school again on Monday. Like, it's just like,
yeah. Or run into each other later in the
Biff.
Night, because it seems to happen quite a bit.
He decides he's going to pull him out. Biff starts beating him up, but he gets that one thing of courage. His cowardly limp hand turns into a powerful fist, and he gets a nasty right hook on Biff and knocks him clean out. Are you okay? She's got the lovey-dovey eyes. The band breaks Marty out of the trunk, but he slices the guitar player's hand open so he can't play. Hey, you guys gotta go on because they gotta dance, and if they don't dance, they're not gonna kiss. If they don't kiss, they're not gonna fall in love. If they don't fall in love, I'm not gonna be born. So he decides he's gonna play guitar for him while they dance. Which, by the way, this is like my weird, when I was saying, do you have any like time travel bugaboos? I feel like once he's
the electric
playing
guitar,
he should stop disappearing, because she's now wanting him to kiss her. Nothing Marty does the rest of the movie is now gonna affect their relationship, you know?
Yeah, everything's back
so
on track.
Once he's like, there has to be music, because if there's no music, they can't dance. Now that there's music back on, there should be. Everything should be fine. You know what I'm saying? She wants...
Doesn't matter the quality of the music. I mean, it's still music, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say the type of music.
Earth
maybe the
angel,
the kicker.
Angel. But that's after.
Like,
that's once he gets his powers back.
Yeah.
You know, he's fading away because they haven't technically kissed
right.
yet. The guy pushes George out of the way. You know, we think it's like super intense, possibly thrilling.
Yeah.
Finally, George comes in, shoves that clown to the ground because he's got that newfound self-esteem, and he lays a big one on her. Finally, nobody's disappearing anymore. The pictures all come back. They're still wearing the same clothes, which is interesting. And then he starts fucking shredding, bruv. He's so good on the guitar.
So good.
The movie becomes
just
a musical.
Wailing.
They start doing Johnny B. Goode, and he's just doing Eddie Van Halen's eruption up there.
I like that line, though, because it does become a musical. The movie does become a musical. There is a Back to the Future
that's
musical.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. When my wife and I were in London last year, it was we saw Wicked, but like they have their theater row all right there, and one of them I was like, oh shit, didn't know that was a thing,
I'd give it a watch.
Johnny B. Goode.
Oh yeah,
it's the exact same movie, no music except for that one part. Oh,
and the power of love,
for sure, and then it probably ends with Back in Time. Yeah,
could be
other songs. Butthead, I'm sure Butthead is probably a good song. You know, the villain has to have a song,
self-titled.
The villain always has a song, so you know.
Butthead.
You know, Biff Tannen probably lays into a
Butthead solo.
Yeah, and he's like, I bet his goons are backing him up. You know,
the barbershop quartet snapping.
Oh, Oh yeah, for sure. There was one guy at the dance doing that 1950s.
Yeah.
Finger snap while the girls are dancing. It always cracks me up. He's getting ready to leave because he's got to go. Everything's back to normal. They fell in love. Hey, before you go, if you guys do have kids, be nice to the one that lights your carpet on fire. will we ever see you again? Yeah, probably down the road. Then he leaves, and I always laugh. The first time when we were going to record this a while back, I watched this with my wife, Cassie. And she has that line. She goes, "Marty, I like that name." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm going to name my third child Marty." I like the name, just not the
first.
Enough
not enough for the firstborn.
He races to the car. That's where we find out that Marty had given Doc that letter, pretty much saying, on the night that we go back in time, you get shot and killed. You need to take precautions, kind of thing. Doc finds it. It's a real intense thing. I can't deal with the responsibility. Tears it up, throws it in the air. They're about to have this argument, but the wind picks up. Tree knocks the cable down, unhooks it. Now we got bigger problems. This is our one shot.
This is the thriller part right here.
For sure.
Dude, when he's clinging to those clock hands... Like my palms are getting sweaty just thinking about it.
Yeah, mom's spaghetti.
My knees weak and arms heavy.
Really alley-ooped that one, didn't you?
Yeah.
So Doc climbs up to the tower. He's got the cords he's trying to hook up. Marty goes back. He's like, "Whatever you do, just hit the gas when this alarm goes off. I'll figure everything else out." So this leads me to my Universal Studios story. Obviously, they have that tram. There's a tram tour, Michael, since you said you haven't gone. It's like a 45-minute tour. It's pretty cool. It takes you down the back lot.
Solid tour length, too.
A bunch of sound stages. Honestly,
that was the best part of the whole thing.
It's worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
However much it costs, because it's like you're actually on a... Like the one in California. I can't speak for the one in Florida. But the one in California, you're actually where... You know, important films are made. They'll point out stages. This is where Frankenstein was filmed. You know, the classics. They'll hit you with a bunch of stuff, and they'll take you onto a bunch of backlot tours. You know, the airplane from War of the Worlds that crashes. Tom Cruise is walking through. It's still there. It's all, you know, out there. Anyway, off the tram tour, obviously they take you to Hill Valley and you can see the clock tower that's still there. It's in a bunch of like that back lot was used for Gilmore Girls too. So if you watch Gilmore Girls, that's the quad area. But down further over by where the Jurassic Park ride was, there's these three buildings that are all connected, sound stages. And you go in there and you learn about how, you know, after you film the movie, add special effects, or even how they film certain things in a soundstage. So there's one room where you go in there and it's a bunch of Foley work. You know, we need like 5 volunteers. Hey, when this light lights up, hit this and it makes a sound, so it sounds like, you know, feet are walking across, you know, this. When this light goes on, flip this open so it sounds like a window's creaking open, you know, that kind of thing. The last room is like this massive... soundstage, and they have like a the clock tower, the giant clock, but it's eye level. It's not like the huge tower. It's maybe a story in the air, but it's like, this is what we do. Only instead of filming outside him hooked up, what we do is we film in here. We got the camera on him. He's really only, you know, 15 feet in the air. He's harnessed in. We need a volunteer, and we'll show you how they filmed this scene. My dad raises his hand, and he gets pulled off onto the stage. They put him in the Doc Brown wig. They give him a cloak. They have him harnessed to the clock, and he's got 2 Colt cables above him. And they're like, "Okay, Robert, when we say action..." I remember this, too. It's crazy. It's 1998, so I'm 7 years old. In my head, this is like the coolest thing of all time, because my dad's up there doing this. We used to have home video footage of it. I don't know where the tape is now, but this will live rent-free in my head forever. like, okay, Robert, when we call action, you're going to try to get the cables put together, and the guy's kind of narrating the action kind of thing. And action. All right, Robert, let's send Marty back to the future. Okay, you know, all right, get those cables. Obviously, the cables are stuck, so he can't actually pull them together. But, you know, just keep acting like you're trying to hook them together. All right, well, Robert, it was pretty windy that night, so let's add some wind. So a big fan hits, you know, his cloak's flowing, you know, he's got the wig is flowing. All right, yep, it was also raining that night, so let's add some rain. You know, they turn on the
fire hose. Spring,
the fire hose.
Essentially, you know, to make it look like it's raining in front of the camera. They got the aluminum tins that make, you know, like thunder. Oh, and then of course we need some lightning, so let's get some lightning, Robert. We gotta send Marty back to the future. You know, they simulate lightning hitting the tower, and the lights go out, and the lights come back on, and there's a smoking skeleton where my dad was in Doc Brown, you know, and I'll never forget. So the lights come back on, and the narrator guy goes, "Oh, Robert.
Not again.
We lost another one." So I was asking him about it the other day. I was like, "Do you remember this at all? Because I remember this so vividly." And he goes, "Yeah, it was wild. You know, they took me into a back room. I could see the other side of the tower. So obviously I could see that there was a skeleton there." He said that when the lights went out, you know, the wall just like, you know, flipped around. He said it was a lot of fun. I thought that would be... I will never forget that for as long as I live, but, you know.
Yeah, I remember that, too. It's just, it's wild that your dad got picked, you know?
Yeah. I wish we could find that tape. We moved so many times. And
It's funny because on the same trip that I went there, my cousin got picked at SeaWorld to do the Shamu show on that same California trip. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool.
How wet did he get?
Soaked.
And now you're just walking around in salt water the rest of the day.
Yeah. Smelling like fish.
And also, you know, obviously they used to have the Back to the Future ride at Universal Studios that I'm sure you've ridden, right, Brandon? Yeah. You know, they put you in that DeLorean, you fly around, which Zemeckis filmed, you know, specifically for the attraction, you know, a bunch of miniatures. That's now a Simpsons ride.
Mm. Oh, is that what it is now?
R.I.P.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Bummer.
And they're probably going to have to change it out, too, because they're about to lose their Simpsons license at Universal Studios. Now, I'm hoping the Back to the Future ride comes back once they get rid of Simpsons area.
Is Backdraft still there?
I don't know. I think that... Because those sound stages aren't even there anymore.
That's how old I am, I guess, the last time I went to Universal Studios. That was my favorite of all time, was the Backdraft, just that...
Yeah.
And the Water World. The Water World was pretty cool, Michael, they put you in a room.
The Water World Stunt Spectacular is amazing.
So cool.
Best stunt show I've ever seen in my life. Michael, this Backdraft attraction was right next to those sound stages. They put you in a room, so there's a movie called Backdraft. It's firefighters. They put you in a room, they light the room on fire.
Well, they
real fire.
Yeah, they funnel you through this like walkway thing, you know, and like the sound stage is literally like 30 feet from you, and then they just light this whole room on fire.
And it is hot.
Hot.
And the metal bridge you're on starts getting too hot, and then they do this thing where they move the bridge forward a bit, so like you have like a jump. I was like, I can't believe they used to do that.
Yeah. This seems like an opportunity for people to fall all over each other.
This isn't like they lit some fires.
They lit the fire.
The room on fire.
It's like an explosion. Like,
when you're there for the first time, I was like 6 or 7. I'm like, well, this is it.
this is how I go out.
I'd never even seen the movie yet. I just thought that this was some sick thing they did to people.
that whole trip though got me just like obsessed with movies.
Yeah. we used to go to Southern California every year. We usually did Disneyland, but we did Universal like every 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And it was always like, you know, you, obviously how time works. You're 5 years older, so now you appreciate more things as you go. Especially that tram, because now I've seen this movie that we're filming at, you know, or the next time, oh, now I've seen this movie, you know, that kind of thing. So you're like, oh, I'm actually, I feel, you can feel it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a fun little mechanic, but.
I feel like I don't even have to go to Universal anymore. I got all the through you guys.
I mean, I would still recommend.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
No. You gotta go to Mario World now.
I usually only go to Disney World like every 20 years or so.
Once in my lifetime.
I went in 2001, and then I went again in 2019. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, so twice.
So 2038, you're going to go back.
Yep, planning it right now. Starting to budget right now. Putting a dollar away every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I haven't been since 2009. Sorry, I haven't been to Disneyland since 2014, but Universal since
probably been like a good 25 years for me.
Universal Studios was advertising the fourth Fast and the Furious movie last time I was there.
Oh, jeez.
The last time I was there, because I've been there twice or maybe three times, I can't quite remember, but they were doing the, it was Shrek 4D was the last time.
Shrek 4D.
Yeah, I've done that.
I think the first Transformers had maybe just...
Oh, so that was like 2007? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times. So what's... Yeah.
Great movie, though. I mean, if you make a... If you get a ride at Universal Studios, though, I mean, that's... That cements you in movie lore.
Yeah. Except for Jurassic World. They just reskinned the Jurassic Park ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a bunch of screens up. But they used to have that Terminator 2 Judgment Day thing. That was, it was like a show.
Yeah.
But it was like a 3D adventure. Cool. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to the future.
Let's get back to the future.
Doc Brown is able to connect the thing my dad wasn't able to do. He was able to string the wires together and then slide down the wires before lightning strikes. And actually, it does kind of strike, and he kind of puts it in right as, because he unhooks again from, he's able to hook it up top, and then it unplugs the one from the bottom, and he, so he gets down, he's able to connect it. Marty hits that wire right as the lightning hits, blasts off again, get those flaming tracks. Doc Brown, hip hip hoorays, is hooting and hollering, he finally did it, we figured it out. Marty's back, and we cut to 1985, and he like crashes into the porn theater because he's just going straight. He decides, well, I should say before, he messes the time a bit so he can go back 10 minutes before he goes so he could try to save Doc. But again, he has no fuel. He used it all up. Doesn't he just like hit it real hard and it starts up? It's one of those things. It's just like, okay, movie magic. He doesn't just push it to a Texaco station and fill it up real quick.
It's like blowing in the Nintendo cartridge.
You just gotta hit the monitor and it works.
Yeah.
He sees the Libyan nationalists drive by him, so now he's gotta hurry. He drives to now the Lone Pine Mall. It's no longer the Twin Pine Mall. Pine Tree, when he went back in 1955.
The one where they keep the continuity. Man. That's funny.
Yeah. Which is something I didn't even notice until like, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. I was like, oh, I never even noticed that. It's a different name. Shows up, but it's still just not enough time. He sees Doc get shot. He sees himself get in the car, drive away. The Libyans crash. The car doesn't blow up. They just kind of crash, so they could still be alive. They spend a lot of time in that one area. I'm just saying that the Libyans are probably okay. He sees the car go back to the past. He runs over to Doc. That was too late. But he sits up, reveals he's got a bulletproof vest on. He goes, what about the ramifications? And he goes, I thought, what the hell? Not my problem. It's the future's problem. happy ending, drives him home. Hey, when you go to the future, look me up, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. Will do. Tussles his hair. He goes to bed. He wakes up in the morning, and his house is nice as fuck, guys. His family's wealthy. His parents love each other. His father published a book. He goes, it's like I always told you.
Didn't they just come back from like
that once?
Yeah, didn't they come back from playing tennis? Yeah. It's like so unlike them.
All because he punched Biff in the face. He found that new confidence. Mm. We go out there. We see that Biff is now his lackey waxing his car, which again, I think is insane.
Yeah, why do you keep the guy around?
Now, Biff, always trying to get away with stuff. Yeah, man.
Yeah, kind of weird.
Trying to get away from you. Wife,
and now he's like your sidekick now. Marty's girlfriend shows up. We're going to go out to the lake. We got that we got that Toyota that Brandon wanted so bad.
Yeah.
I had the little Hot Wheels version of
it. So did I.
But Doc comes back. We can't stay here. It's your kids, Marty. We got to do something about your kids. He's like, why can't you just tell me how to fix them now? Because that's the future. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just like one of those silly things. But we're setting up a sequel that they didn't even think they were going to get. It was just more of a ha-ha. You know, but then it got greenlit for, and they're like, oh shit, now we gotta
write. Now we actually have to write a story around it, yeah.
Now we gotta figure out what the future looks like, because we promised the future. You know, he hits us with that roads where we're going, we don't need roads line.
Another good one.
Wheels pop up, takes off flying. Bum, 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 bum. Boom, movie over. I had read that by the time the VHS had come out, because Back to the Future 2 was in 89, they reprinted on the VHS to be continued. Did you get a to be continued when you saw it?
Mm-mm.
When you watched it? I don't know how you watched it. But I have it on my Blu-ray, I have it. But when it was originally in theaters, it didn't have a to be continued.
Yeah, I own it. I own the digital version on like Google Movies.
Mm. Google Movies.
Google.
Yeah, I freaking rented it, and then I saw it's on Netflix. I'm like, what the? I use my Google Opinion Rewards thing, so I don't really spend any money. I basically just spent Google's money, but
that's what I do, and I just reinvest it right back into Google by buying a movie.
Yeah,
you get.
Dude, at one point, I had like $30.
Yeah,
down
it's
like
awesome,
nine, but it just yeah.
They give you money for your opinions.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's kind of creepy sometimes. I go to this grocery store up the street all the time just to get stuff. It's kind of expensive, but for onesie twosies, it's fine. Called New Seasons, and then 2 hours later be like, oh, you have a new opinion reward, and be like, have you visited
At New Seasons?
Yeah, it's like, have you visited any of these stores? And it's like, random place, New Seasons, random place. I'm like, New Seasons?
when did you go? Last month? This week? Yesterday?
It's
today?
Like, yeah, it's like, you're Friday, like, damn. July 12th? And you're like,
5 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
shit.
Anyways.
But then you get Google Play credit.
Yeah,
and then you just turn that into money and buy or rent movies.
Yep, or a premium version of a Game Boy Advance emulator.
So I can play Back to the Future.
Yes, or Pokemon
the game.
Red.
The
know?
Game.
On Sega.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get yourself a Sega Genesis, play the old Sega game.
Well, love that.
A computer game.
Oh, yeah. I got a couple emulators on my... I have a PS2 emulator. I was playing Spyro, and I got all sorts of shit, man.
Do you guys think this movie's a thriller?
Yes.
Yes. Adventure thriller.
It's not. Sorry.
The fuck?
Dang it.
Not according to AFI. It is, however, the number 10 sci-fi film, according to the AFI.
Yep.
Okay, I guess it's science fiction. Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, time travel.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, time travel.
All right, but it is thrilling, though, in my opinion.
I was expecting it to be there. I was like, surely.
We've been...
Of all the
biffed before.
Biffed.
That's about as fun as a green door on a battleship. This movie famously fired Eric Stoltz. Do you know about this, Michael? They wanted Michael J. Fox for this movie, obviously.
But Family Ties was getting in the way.
Yeah, Family Ties, the famous show he was on in the 80s. The producer of the show didn't want to give up him because they had a TV show to make. So they were like, well, let's hire Eric Stoltz. He kind of looks like him.
Like a mix between like David Spade and and Michael J. Fox.
He's definitely got his facial, you know, the structure. He's much taller than Michael J. Fox, but they hire him. And Eric Stoltz was very method. He only answered to Marty. They filmed for 5 weeks. While filming, the guy who plays Biff, Tom Wilson, has said that he was, like, way too method. When they were doing the pushing and shoving, he, like, almost broke his collarbone because he shoved him so hard. And he was expecting, like, an actor push and not, like, a full body shove. And that he had said
that's a hell of a push.
He was, like, planning to, in the cafeteria when Biff shoves him, he was, like, he was planning to, like, give it back to him. But he never made it to that day before he got fired. Zemeckis, while filming, was like, we're just not... He doesn't have the comedy chops that I want, that we wrote for this movie. Something's not working. It's a little dark. I'm not to say that, like, he's just, like, a scary, dark person, but, like, the comedy wasn't hitting. He went to Spielberg, showed him dailies. Spielberg agreed. So they said, but we can't fire him if we don't have a replacement ready to go. Because if we do that, the studio's going to scrap the movie altogether. So they reach out. I wrote the guy's name down.
Dutch Faith?
Gary David Goldberg, who was the producer of Family Ties. Once again, please. And Goldberg said, I'll let him read the script, and if he wants to do it, he can, but Family Ties has to be the priority. You work around our schedule. We don't work around yours. Michael J. Fox read the script, said it was the best thing he's ever read. So he was starting his day about, it was like 10 in the morning, and would film until 6 p.m. on Family Ties. Then he would get in a station wagon that they had a mattress down there for him. He would take a nap while they drove him to set, and they would film night scenes from 6 wow. p.m. until about 4 or 5 in the morning. And then I saw in an interview, Michael J. Fox said that he was being carried into his house and put in his bed. He would sleep for about 4 to 5 hours a day, get up, take a cold shower, go to set, film Family Ties. And he did that the entire... And they were also 5 weeks behind, which is what ballooned the budget to $19 million. Because they added another $4 million. They paid out Stoltz. Eric Stoltz's girlfriend in the movie, so Jessica, right? That's her name, Jessica? Jennifer? Jessica? Marty's girlfriend. Was actually cast as Melora Hardin, who plays Jan Gould from The Office. She was cast as the girlfriend, but then when they brought in Michael J. Fox, they're like, she's 5 inches taller than him.
Yeah.
So they let her go. She never filmed a scene. They just took one photo that was going to be like a photo that he carried in his wallet, but she never actually filmed, and that's when they brought in the gal they had, who originally had to turn it down because she started in a TV show, but by the time after the 5 weeks it had already been canceled, so she was able to come back and film the movie, and then she gets recast as Elizabeth Shue in the second and third movies. And they were so behind the eight ball that by the time they wrapped filming and the movie premiered was only 9 weeks.
Jeez. Sweet Jesus.
It's crazy. Yeah, I do find it interesting in the parallels between Michael J. Fox's character in Family Ties to Marty McFly. They're like almost the exact same character.
I get all those shows, those is like All in the Family, Family Ties. There's another
I
one
do
with
too.
Family.
And then you had Robin Williams, you know, a little bit before that in that show that what was that one show that he was in at around the same time?
The alien movie?
Mork? No.
Mork and Mindy?
Mork. No.
Yeah, he's an alien, right?
Is that the concept?
Yeah, because it's a spinoff.
I've never watched it.
Happy Days.
Yeah.
There was like a bunch of spinoffs from Happy.
Yeah, Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, Mork from Ork. What was the?
That's right.
What was his catchphrase? Zabadoo, something like that. Yabba dabba dooba.
Nanu.
Yeah. I love this movie.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. you know, a question that will never be answered. And just like when we did the original list, knowing our opinion doesn't actually matter. Do you think this movie should be on the top 100 list of all time?
I had that thought, too.
I think you could make a case for it, and I think it would probably sit in the late 80s, 90s on the top 100 list.
Yeah,
I think you could make an argument.
It's a cultural touchstone.
And the, like, watchability, yeah. And the, like, it's well-prepared, mostly. But, like, it's an easy watch. Like you said, it's a popcorn film, and, like, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of, like we've gone through, like, a bunch of Spielberg movies on there that could be really, you know, a lot of duplicates that are on there that probably don't need to be. And ones like these, I feel like you could definitely make room for it. So, but yeah, like a cultural touchstone. I mean, that's saying something right there, too.
Yeah. This movie, along with this, I should say, franchise, along with the Indiana Jones original trilogy, is what started... when we were all on Night Crew, it's what started the movie marathons. I know, Michael, you've been to one. Brandon, you didn't go. But back in the day when we were all on Night Crew, a close friend of mine, Brandon's personal enemy, Zach, had never seen either Indiana Jones or a Back to the Future film. So we decided, let's have a movie marathon. Let's watch 6 movies. We decided to do Back to the Future first because they're kind of redundant. It's not shade at them, but by the third one, you're like, I've seen this Biff say this exact phrase 17 times.
Yeah, and that's why I left the third one out of my favorites because it's like the same thing. You just take both of them and you mash it into one, and then you've got 3.
Especially since 2 and 3 were filmed back to back, it was like one of the first films to ever do that.
Yeah.
They filmed them. Not simultaneously, but back to back. So yeah, I mean, like, so I had like 10-15 people at my house, you know, and then obviously people kind of peel off by the end of it. But that's kind of what kickstarted those movie marathons. But I love this movie. In 2015, on October 26, 2015, that's the day. In the second movie, they go back into, well, they go to the future, I should say. The theater for us showed all 3, and my dad and 2 of my sisters all went and did the marathon, the 3 movie marathon. And then I watched this movie like 4 times in the last month and a half. So
yeah.
I probably won't watch it again for a while, but I still.
Yeah, I mean, I have to take a little break from it too.
Yeah. All in all, 2 thumbs up for me.
Same.
How many flux capacitors would you give it?
5 out of 5.
Flux capacitors.
You know what's funny is the word flux. So I've been learning Java lately. It's a coding language. And they have this thing called a flux action. And it's a time-stamped, like a time-stamped event. So I thought that got me really funny there. What is... flux action is an asynchronous sequence of values or an object that represents an event. So,
time travel.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
And it capacitates.
Go.
You gotta shield your eyes from the light, is what it says. But.
Yep.
Do we have anything else we wanna discuss? Throw out?
No. Do we wanna.
You wanna talk about what we're doing next time?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, we're gonna double dip with some Zemeckis. Like I said, we all. You know, we chose 10 movies to do, and we're just going chronologically through. So this next one is a my pick, and it's, again, an argument for I think this should be over Forrest Gump on the list. We're doing Who Framed Roger Rabbit, personal favorite of mine. Looking forward to sitting down and talking to you guys about that movie. Also, we're getting a little bit extra Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yeah, too. Double dip of Christopher Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. So,
one crazy hair and one bald.
Oh, and he talks just like this. Lisa. So we'll be back next time with Who Framed Roger Rabbit. What do you say we go ahead and cut print check the gate?
See you guys.
See you.